Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday school offered for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.
That tells us to compromise. So last week when we left Daniel and his three friends, we saw Daniel responding to life's drama with integrity. Instead of compromising his pursuit of the Almighty, he stood and he acted with wisdom and discretion. He wasn't a jerk. He didn't go on social media. He didn't take some revenge campaign. He acted within a godly character and conduct. He bathed the situation in prayer, and he continued to worship. Come on, somebody. And so King Nebuchadnezzar, what we see happen is Nebuchadnezzar had this troubling dream, if you remember last week, that no one could interpret. And so Daniel sought an audience with him and told the king that there was a God in heaven. Not that he was able, but there was a God in heaven who was able, the one true God, to bring some understanding of this troubling dream that King Nebuchadnezzar had. And actually, this dream had to do with future kingdoms to come. The Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Greek and the Roman Empires. And finally, all of these earthly kingdoms would be conquered by God's kingdom, who would humble all of these earthly kingdoms. All of this pointed to God's sovereignty overall. And I don't know about you, but I need to be reminded at times that God's in control when the world looks like it's out of control, right? I need to be reminded of that. That's a good and it's a true message. And so as Nebuchadnezzar is troubled by seeing, you know, this colossus, he sees, remember, this image, this massive image, and all these different materials that formed this massive colossus. And Daniel interprets this for him. We read King Nebuchadnezzar's response. Say that three times fast, okay? Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel. Now look at Nebuchadnezzar's response to Daniel's prayerful reaction of integrity. It says, truly, your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery. Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel remained in the king's court. I want you to remember that was Nebuchadnezzar's response to life's crisis that he saw God sovereign over. Because a lot of us, we've had some drama in our lives, and God has proven himself sovereign. And we're going to see something that happens very, and I see this cycle in people's lives all the time. But before we get to there, last week, if you guys read the DHF update, Rick Grace shared about listening to Tim Tebow speak at the National Christian Counselors Conference in Nashville. How many of you remember Tim Tebow? Remember Tim Tebow? Tim Tebow is pretty amazing. In 2007, Tim Tebow was the Florida Gators starting quarterback, and he became the first college sophomore to win a Heisman Trophy. In 2008, Tebow led Florida to a 13-1 record and its second national championship in 3 years, and he was named the offensive MVP and the national champ of the national championship game. He has SEC records in passing efficiency and rushing touchdowns, and he's a top 10 in the NCAA record book. And he often had Bible verses on his eye black. As you can kind of see, one of those, actually, yeah, you can kind of see it in that number 15, the Sports Illustrated one. He's got Bible verses. In 2009, at the BCS championship game, he wore John 3:16 on his eye black, and that verse, in the next 24 hours, got 90 million hits on Googling. 90 million hits. It was the highest Google search term over the next 24 hours. And so, what did the NCAA do? In 2010, they instituted the Tebow rule. No more messages in the eye black. He was drafted in the first round by the Denver Broncos, and he started the last three games of his rookie seasons, and the Broncos were 1-4 before he became the starter. But when he began winning on the field, as Tebow had his opportunity, and often he would rally these tremendous late fourth quarter comebacks, and they won their first AFC West title and their first playoff game since 2005, defeating the Pittsburgh Steelers in overtime. Now, Tebow, y'all know that Tebow, he, you know, does his Tebowing. When he would score a touchdown, he'd go down on a knee and just give honor and thanks to God. I think that was a pretty cool thing, but it really upset people. And he began to use his speaking platform to draw attention to his biblical worldview, his pro-life stance, and as well as his stance on biblical sexuality. He was abstinent. He was unmarried, and so he practiced abstinence. And this came to a head as he appeared in 2 30-second ads, pro-life ads, that were put on by Focus of the Family during the 2010 Super Bowl. And so this once celebrated Heisman Trophy winner began to be scrutinized and ridiculed. They had mocked him on Saturday Night Live skits. He became the butt of a joke. He then had several other short stints with teams that were unsuccessful. And despite his impressive charitable work with disabled youngsters and in missions, he became a polarizing figure. All he did was try to benefit those around him, and he was attacked for his stance in Christ. How can you go from the pinnacle of success to the center of controversy? How can you go from having a medal on your chest to a target on your back? I'm going to tell you how. You stand for Jesus. If you stand for Jesus, you can pretty well be guaranteed that the world isn't going to care for you too much. In fact, Jesus told us that don't be surprised if the world hates you because it hated me first. Now, remember Nebuchadnezzar. Remember how we just said that Nebuchadnezzar, God showed himself sovereign over his crisis in life. He saw this big, big thing that he couldn't understand. And Daniel revealed that God was giving him a message. And so he saw that God was the Lord of Kings. Well, that's the end of the story, right? No, let's look at the next chapter, chapter 3. Look what Nebuchadnezzar does. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth was 6 cubits. Wait a minute. Didn't we just read that he was perplexed by something that was greater than himself, that he didn't understand? And Daniel came and said, look, this is about kingdoms. This is about God's sovereignty over all these kings. And so, you know, what I see happens in so many people's lives, they have a crisis that's bigger than them. God reveals himself, but he doesn't become Lord in their heart. And they quickly begin to do exactly what Nebuchadnezzar, I'm going to build an idol. I'm gonna build an idol and have everyone respond to this. Nebuchadnezzar made this image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth was six cubits. In other words, it's 90 feet tall by 9 feet wide. That's a pretty impressive little colossus here. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps and the prefects and the governors and the counselors and the treasurers and the justices and magistrates and all of the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. It just amazes me to look back and think that God hadn't proved himself in his life yet after he had proven himself in his life. Now, don't miss that fact. Those of you who've had crisis and had drama and God's proven himself and then you decide that you're just going to take it right up and go back to this regularly scheduled program. How many times does God have to prove himself? How many times? Well, he's on a mission here. Verse 3 says, then Satrap, the prefects and the governors and the counselors, the treasurer, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the province gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. You'd see that what he's saying here. Who set it up? Nebuchadnezzar had set it up, okay? And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that you should hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every..." It sounds like some country music I know, right? The steel drivers here, okay? "And you are to fall down and to worship the golden image that..." Who? King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Man, his tune has changed. And before you like to throw shame on Nebuchadnezzar, just think of how much our tune changes once the storm passes. I'm not looking at you, I'm looking at myself in the mirror. How many times the crisis hits and we call out to God and God responds, the storm abates and we go right back to where we were before. So pick it up. It says, hey, you're going to hear this sound. You're going to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Verse 6. "And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace." Where was the influence of Daniel? Where was the influence of him and his four of his three remarkable Hebrew youths who remained in positions of influence? We don't see their influence here. It's sad that the memory for the goodness of God and his benefits is so short-lived in our lives. So a couple thoughts for us here today. Thought number one is the world demands that you worship what it deems important. And I get it, because there are moments when God shows himself and we come to our senses. Anybody ever had that epiphany where you realize, man, I have my priorities messed up? Come on. And has anybody realized that? My priorities are messed up. They're not according to God. Drama has hit and I gotta correct myself. And that goes fine for a short season. Then things go good. And the influence of the culture, it's right back on us. And we go right back to where we were. The world doesn't care of your dedication and commitment to Christ. It has set priorities, and those priorities don't necessarily coincide with following Christ. Remember, the first commandment that was given was that you will have no other gods. You're not going to have idols. And so the king built this image. He made a new priority. And then he's telling everyone, you have to bow down to this. What I think is kind of interesting is that the Hebrew words, there's many Hebrew words for worship, but a couple of the Hebrew words for worship, like barak and whatnot, have to do with bowing down. The literal Hebrew words for worship, I want you to take what should be going to God, and I want to reprioritize it. You see, when we get to these times, this will often conflict with God's priorities. Do you realize when you're trying to follow God's priorities, it will bring you into stark contrast and conflict with the world's priorities. And the world does not like it when you do not bow. Anybody felt that? We just saw it with Tim Tebow. We saw it for a woman in the UK this week who was arrested for praying silently. Praying silently. In an area they said no. Well, she was acquitted, but she was literally arrested for praying silently for her stance for all life is in the image of God. I look at Daniel 3:8. "Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews." So how did they accuse the Jews? Maliciously. In other words, there are people in this world who are going to be malicious to those who are going to stand for God. As we said a minute ago in the Gospel of John, Jesus said, look, don't be surprised. We are in this world, but our citizenry is not just in this world. We have a heavenly citizenry, and we need to understand that we are members of that kingdom. In the case of our high-profile example from years ago, Tim Tebow, his stance for God made him a target. Rumors of relational breakups due to his abstinence stance fueled the fire that he was not normal. You know what? Tim Tebow wasn't normal. And I want you to know, it's okay to not be normal because normal stinks. Wide is the path that leads to destruction. That's what the scripture tells us. Wide is the path that leads to destruction. Many are there, but narrow is the road. It leads to righteousness. Narrow is the road that leads to God's kingdom. Do you want to go with the flow? If you want to go with the flow, you're going to end up where the majority of people go, gang. And so what do we see? Culture demands that you bow or else it will turn on you and attack you. We see it over and over in our culture and our society today. We see it in so many ways. We've seen it in high-profile individuals' lives. We see it throughout Scripture over and over again. When I came here in 2005, seems like a long time ago. But you know what? Our culture here in Pike County was vastly different than it is now in several ways. For one, Wednesday nights were always left open. Sports things, the sports calendar was left open. Sundays were left open. And now, and again, I get it. I like sports. I enjoyed watching several games last night. I do. I enjoy sports. I had kids who are athletes. I really do get it. And I know what it's like. As a parent, how difficult it is. We don't want our kids to suffer the consequences of not being whatever, doing what everyone else does. But I'm telling you, look, we have to prioritize spiritual development. The reason it continues is because no one takes a stand. That's why it continues. I don't want to get in trouble with people. I don't want to get in trouble with those other areas. But at the same time, I want to tell you the truth. I get how hard it is. I remember making stances and suffering the consequences of saying, no, we're not going to go along with all that. That we're going to prioritize Christ. And it's difficult. It's hard. But goodness gracious, we got sports things that happen on weekends, Wednesday nights. Yeah, there's lots of stuff because everyone says we got to do our thing and we need time. And yet schedules get busier and busier and busier. And we think if our kids don't do absolutely everything, that somehow they're going to be faulty human beings. And we forget what's the one thing that's important is eternity. And that's the first thing that goes out the window. Are your commitments to God the first to be compromised? I'm going to tell you as a parent, That was what we always felt the pressure, is that our commitments for spiritual development were the first things that had to be attacked and the first things that we felt were on the chopping block. We didn't always make the right. It was hard. And it's hard. It is hard, gang. 18 years later, Wednesdays are busy. Sunday nights have conflicts from time to time, and sometimes even Sunday morning. It's not just school stuff, travel ball, goodness gracious. I get it. It's hard, but these schedules, you know, as we deal with these things, gang, if Sunday morning, now, I'm going to get you, because I get this. You know, people are like, oh, well, that means you have to, coming to church is the extent of your Christianity. Absolutely not. If Sunday morning is the extent of your Christianity, you have a problem. But I hope that we, as a generation of Christian leaders, don't don't feel comfortable teaching the next generation of Christ followers that just a little dabble do you, this bro cream Christianity. We need to lean into the, I showed my age there because everybody's like, bro cream? What in the world is that? How many of you know what bro cream was? I said that last week or something, or the week before. How many of you used it? Okay, a few less on that one. Obviously, I don't, so. Look, you know, kids need parents. They need godly, loving, ethical parents to help them navigate life. And that is now more than ever. And I'm going to tell you, I get it that there is a 90-foot high false image that says this is what you have to do to be successful. And I'm going to tell you, at times that flies in the face of God's word and God's priorities. There are several golden images now that have been erected of late. These ideological idols demand that you bow and you capitulate to them, or you will be punished. Gender fluidity, sexual identity, critical race theory, to name a few of these things that you, if you do not adopt as lock and step with what culture says, you will suffer the consequences. They demand your homage or else. Let's continue in the story in Daniel chapter 3, verse 7. Therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, blah, 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 blah. Okay. As soon as they, that all the languages fell down and they worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews, and they declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound again, of all these instruments, bow down and worship this golden image. Verse 11, and whoever does not fall down shall be cast in the burning fiery furnace. Verse 12, there are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. A system has set up, a change has happened, despite the evidence that Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael's faithfulness to God has shown to be beneficial. Nope, the new culture demands that you bow. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past. It doesn't matter the track record of thousands of years that we see in our society today. You have to bow. It's amazing to me that the world has such long memory of grudges and has such a short memory of the goodness of God. And so these three, as we said, they have a target on their back, and so will we when we walk as Jesus calls us to walk. Let's continue in our story, verse 15. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately, this was a response going before Nebuchadnezzar as they're coming to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I love their response because this is what we need to be encouraged. Can we stand? What happens if we're going to stand? So they're threatened. If you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into the burning fiery furnace. You guys know this story. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? Boy, he'd forgotten. The one who already revealed mysteries. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king. Let's all read how they answered. Ready? O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Bam! How do you think that went over? Yeah. Yep. That's pretty impressive stuff. That's pretty impressive faith. Second point, stand unapologetically. I didn't say stand as a jerk. I didn't say stand aggressively. I said stand unapologetically. Gang, we are called to stand. We're not called to be idiots. We're not called to be aggressive. We're not called to sit there and be protagonistic. We're called to stand. You don't need to apologize for following Christ. We need to stand. Their commitment to God was not limited to... Now, I love this. Their commitment to God wasn't limited to what God would do for them. So a lot of us, we kind of have this really bad theology. We have this really, really troubling theology. As if somehow, I call it theological reciprocity. In other words, if I do something for God, he owes me. I want you to know, he's already front-loaded the covenant with you. He has already purchased your salvation. This world is destined for destruction, and we have a world that will come. Okay? Trust me. It's much better seeing the world that's going to come and not compromising what we have, not compromising standing for him today. If you follow Christ, hard times will come. This bad doctrine of spiritual reciprocity says, you know what, God, you owe me. And if I do things for you, then somehow my life is going to be peachy keen. How did that work out? I mean, throughout the Bible, how did that work out? We think that somehow we don't have a destination with a fiery furnace. And I'm trying to tell you, you do. Now I need to say this over and over again. Don't be taunting. Don't be ungodly in your responses. But no, if you stand for Christ, and if you stand, remember how we started this whole thing with cruise ship versus battleship Christianity, that we have a code of conduct in a battleship Christianity, and our code of conduct are the two commandments that Jesus gave us that sum everything up. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. So in love and integrity, we stand. And we realize that standing for Christ may lead to a fiery furnace. Far too many serve God only when God does what they want. That's just not what we should be, gang. Our response to the image actually reveals our heart. And so they stood unapologetically. And I think it worked out great for them, even though it was pretty difficult. I'm going to admit that there are some hard things that are going to happen here. Let's pick it up in verse 19. Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. These men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flames of the fire killed the men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This guy's lost his mind. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Once again, doing the right thing doesn't guarantee that tough times will not come. You can stand and all heck can break loose in your life when you stand. So don't expect the world to have the same values as us. But I like to see here, because of our relationship with Christ, what may wipe out others, an unbowed believer can endure. Keep going here in verse 24. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished. Go ahead, next one. And he rose up in haste and declared to his counselors, "Did not we cast 3 men bound into the fire?" And they answered, you guys know the story. You remember it in felt board Sunday school classes, right? And he said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see 4 men unbound, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like who?" There's another in the fire standing next to me. You want to see the fourth person in the fire? You better be in the fire. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace and declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed. Not a big deal for me, but for them it was. Their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Look, I love going. How many of you love going to a Vesper service? But I got to do laundry the next day because my shirt smells like campfire, right? You can be around the fire, and that just kind of gets on you. Then my car smells like, yeah, and again, it's kind of a nice fire. But look, this wasn't the way. This didn't have any effect on them. I think that's all pretty cool. Let's wrap up the story here. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and who set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except for their own. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb for limb and their houses laid in ruin, and there is no other God who's able to rescue in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Didn't he already do this? We read this and we forget. That's the thing that kind of gets me. I was going to call this sermon title, it would be "How Many Times?" How? Because as much as I want to say, I'm like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you know what character I relate to most in this is Nebuchadnezzar. And you do too. Sorry. How many times? How many times? What are the benefits of not bowing? Benefits of not bowing, you will encounter the fourth man in the fire. But I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire that are not hurt, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of God. Man, we have to understand something here. If we want to have that connection, if we want to see him, we need to be where he was. And where was this fourth man in this story? Where was he? He was in the fire. Maybe God is in the fire waiting for you, and you're not willing to follow the path of conflict, which may lead you to him. Ever think of that? That which is intended to harm can actually bless you. We got to be willing to go. That's the area of deliverance for them. Their deliverance was in the furnace. And maybe that's where ours is too. Another benefit of not bowing is we'll find out that God always has the last word. Yeah, he does. God always has the last word. God can use you to demonstrate his glory to those around you, including those who persecute you. How many of you are ready to have your persecutors be blessed? I didn't get an answer to that one. How many of you would like to see your persecutors, the very ones who are torturing you? Well, I'd rather have them burned up like the guys who chucked Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego if we're writing the story, right? No. Because here's what God's doing, is he's proving himself over and over again. See, we can say all day long about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that we relate to them, but as I said a minute ago, the real person who I think that we should hone in on is how God continues to have to prove to the Nebuchadnezzar. Gang, what are the idols that you are building up after God has already shown that we can put our trust in him and that the kingdom that he wants today is greater than anything that we're going to create, that he is God over eternity, over kingdoms. Look at history. God has been faithful and he continues to be. How many times?
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.